Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Podcast Palooza Part I'm Not Completely Sure. This is Kevin DeFranco. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, I've got to admit that due to the length of WrestleMania, I did sleep through my alarm this morning. I did not get up entirely late, too late. But I did indeed sleep through my alarm with The Undertaker finally probably in 99.9% reality retiring. You know, because I was just like, oh, I'm so ready to turn off this feed at midnight. And then I see him put his gear back on. I'm like, huh? And then he sets it all back down. It's just like, oh. And I stuck around for that part. And I was just like, I've got to admit that at that point, I'm just like, yep, Undertaker's retiring. And I was just like, I'm ready to go to bed. I mean, I don't know if we really want to start, you know, at the end. And I didn't really intend to, really. And obviously, if you didn't get this, this is a WrestleMania recap to top off the podcast of Palooza, which crazily will come tomorrow, too. Yeah, I guess instead of starting at the end and kind of the effects of the long show, we can start from the beginning at the pre-show, which I did have my wife yell out to me when I was finishing up the Ultimate Thrill Rye, the black IPA from Stunt Granny Brewing, when the match actually started. And yeah, I was a little surprised that although I think it's a good move on the WWE's part to not start that first match until 5:40, I feel like they started them a tad earlier last year when we were there. I could be mistaken, maybe in the 5:30 range, but I would think that any amount of time later would be good for the participants' ego. Although, when one of the main highlights of the Austin Aries versus Neville match is, oh, people are still filing into their seats at whatever the Citrus Bowl is now called.
Yeah. Yeah, that's never a good spot to be in. But it appears that at least on WrestleMania, I think they even did it at Royal Rumble as well, we're getting the first match in the ring at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. Obviously, you know, time zone dependent, depending on where they're at otherwise. But yeah, that's too early. And it's embarrassing. I mean, it's got to be embarrassing for the guys to go out there like that. It's probably one of the reasons Ryback quit. I mean, from last year.
Oh. yeah, I mean, and I guess to kind of tie it into the late night, like, I mean, I thought that they pushed it late last year, and I want to say that we got out of there at 10:30 Central Time, or it would have been 11:30 on the East Coast. I mean, tack on it another 45 minutes, and it's just like, I don't know how you can realistically expect fans to be there in the stadium for 7 hours.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I have not attended either of these two really extra long WrestleManias. But it doesn't look like they learned any kind of a lesson from last year. I mean, they went longer this year, so I mean, who knows what next year will bring.
Well, and I guess it's kind of interesting. Like, it's one of those things to me that I think they're like, oh, well, we don't have the pay-per-view time constraints anymore. Fuck it, we're going long on the network. It doesn't matter. It's our airtime. And I don't know if that's hurting them in that sense, where they just don't care. They're like, well, we need content anyway, and more people. And it's probably, I guess that's kind of the interesting thing. I wonder if they're just getting a lot of viewers on the network. Like, it might not be good for live fans, but as I kind of said, like, I mean, I could do stuff and keep track of the pre-show.
Right, yeah. I didn't even get to watch the last maybe half of Baron Corbin and Dean Ambrose live.
Okay.
I did go back and I have gone back and watched the Aries Neville match and the Battle Royal. I did not feel the need to watch the first half of Dean Ambrose and Baron Corbin. I do not feel like I missed anything there. But yeah, they're really. Other than just to get bodies on the show, there's no need to even have matches on a pre-show for a show that's going to be this long.
Oh, yeah. And like you said, like, at the end of the night, like, I'm not even sure I remembered what Neville versus Aries looked like match-wise. You know, there was so much else on that show that you know, I don't remember any of the matches being bad.
No, well, the Battle Royal wasn't good. It wasn't good. What would you say?
Oh, trust me. Well, and we can just go ahead and move. I mean, is there that much to say about Aries and Neville? We were both hoping for Neville to win just because they haven't really built the cruiserweights around anyone yet, and losing to Aries after he's barely introduced as a character wouldn't have done all of that whole part of the roster any favors. So, I mean, I'm glad
No,
with the
no.
outcome of the match. I guess, you know, we could get around to that part.
Yeah. Outcome's fine. Match is fine. Yeah, there's nothing much more to talk about with this one.
Yeah, and so yeah, we can then go ahead and move along to the Battle Royal. I will admit that for the most part, because
You call you. You
Jeremy's
called it.
like, how did you pick that without giving a reason behind it? And I'm like, oh, I just said it just to piss Chris off. But Raleigh is one of those guys that, to me, I remember a Triple H post with him with Raleigh doing a box jump, like, oh, he just did the red eye from wherever and came in here and did this. And
Yay.
but it's one of those things that I guess in the broader context of things, I feel like they have really pushed him a lot. Like, even the announcers seem to go out of their way to talk about A. Gronkowski, who obviously got involved in this
Yeah.
in
I
this
mean that was
matchup.
The big reason he won. I mean, they wanted
Yeah.
their sports star moment that a security guard nearly ruined. No, miss. He's part of the show.
Yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit.
But you know what? It actually makes sense that a security would. Because otherwise, why would. I don't care who you are, why are you being allowed to jump the rail at an event?
Well, and just even from the looks of everyone that was in the front row, it's either A, you have lots of money, or B, you're famous and have lots of money.
Yeah.
So he happens to be of the famous and lots of money
For quote
variety.
unquote normal people in the front row of WrestleMania, are you really going to spend $2,000 to jump the rail and get your ass kicked?
And yeah, to get tossed out of there, you don't get your free chair. You don't get, well, especially at that point, you don't even get to watch the main show at all.
No, yeah, yeah, that was kind of silly, but it was a fun. It was the only thing that really popped me in the Battle Royal at all. You know,
it's
waste of Braun Strowman. You know, waste of Big Show. Waste of a number of guys in there. Then everyone else. Once again, it's one of those things that they can just get rid of this thing.
Oh.
I remember Andre. I love Andre, but it just does not really honor him. It's, you know, and everyone doesn't need to be on, doesn't need to get, you know, a few grand or whatever out of the payday. Everyone just
give it to them.
Just pay people. What?
Exactly. You just said it too. Just pay people. It's one of those things where
relatively small amount, I mean, the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the number is, but it's just like, if you're forcing them onto the show anyway, why not just pay them and be done with it? Rather than
pay them for their work and at Access, pay them for their work at and the community events and all the other things that go along with being at WrestleMania weekend and all the events, the type of things, the small little events that they don't send them big name talent to.
Yeah.
Go paint a park bench or plant a tree, you know. John Cena's not going to plant a fucking tree.
Yeah, and I mean, we had a hard time just even talking about this match to start with, too. Like, as much as it's amusing and it riled people up, this win, in the scheme of things, again, like, Baron Corbin, they keep on pointing to his win. They're like, oh, look at where it got Baron Corbin. Yeah, it got him from the second match on the card to the third match on the card.
No, actually got him from the main show to the pre-show this year.
Oh, was that on the main show last year?
Yeah, because they did the Shaq deal.
Oh.
So that's why that was on the main deal show. Yeah.
That's
Rob Gronkowski is no Shaq.
Oh.
But yeah, no, and you know, carrying around the trophy is a total heel move, so I don't think you really do get to do that with Mojo Rawley. So yeah, I don't really see it being much. We'll see if they have plans for Mojo. But what would they be?
I don't know, because
he's not challenging Randy Orton or Dean Ambrose anytime soon.
Well, and they were already mentioning about Zack Ryder coming back
which I can somewhat tolerate them as a team.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's okay, but I mean,
especially lately, Mojo Rawley has learned to tone it down. Of course, surrounding him with Gronk all the time is probably not helping that. But he has cut a couple of, you know, serious promos in the last few weeks before WrestleMania that softened me on the guy a little bit. A little bit.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. That's kind of funny, with Gronkowski being more of a right now star, I guess, than Shaq. But I think it also in some ways goes back to almost everyone knows Shaq. I'm not sure if there is, as much as Gronkowski has covered a lot of places, especially since he's Mr. Party Boy. He's still probably isn't out there as
He's not. He's nowhere near. He's you know, outside of New England. I don't think he's that big a deal. There are plenty of people who, you know, wouldn't know who he was if he was walking down the street with his boys.
Yeah, other than some giant lunkhead. Yeah. So I mean, I guess that does. Since I already mentioned him, Baron Corbin, Dean Ambrose, they were the next matchup.
Man, life probably not good in the Dean Ambrose world right now. That is a complete. That's a major drop. Not just from last year's WrestleMania, from 3 months ago, yeah, the storyline wasn't working. At least as far as getting any interest, any traction. That segment that was, I believe, was cut from SmackDown was one of the worst things I've seen in a long time. And it was bad because of Dean Ambrose. Well, it wasn't because of Baron Corbin. It was because of Dean Ambrose, and it appeared that there were technical issues with Tom Phillips, you know, talking to them or doing however they set those things up.
Well, and I wasn't quite sure if in some ways, and I'm not sure how many people have follow it with the UFC, where things had gotten personal between Cody Garbrandt and Dominic Cruz, and he kind of flipped out and left a sit-down interview. And I wasn't sure if they were kind of going in that direction or not.
Possible, but Dean Ambrose was such an annoying human being in that one, and I usually find Dean Ambrose funny, but he had some bad material, whether it was the writer's material or his material, the combination of the writer's material and his delivery, none of his jokes landed at all.
Yeah, and it really doesn't help that Ambrose has worked off of people that are established, and you can kind of pick on some things. With Baron Corbin, there's just nothing there.
Yeah, no, there was nothing to this, and yeah, the match really was nothing special.
Oh no,
it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't anything special. If anything had to be cut from the main show to make room for that SmackDown women's match, which we'll get to when we get there. this was the thing that we would get cut. It had no traction. Even after following an angle that included attempted murder, it's still nothing about this resonated with people. Yeah,
And I guess this was another one where I didn't think about it, but I don't think were any of these matches listed actually on the sub-site as the pre-show matches when we did the review, because I feel like as the SmackDown women were on there, I know that Aries and Neville were on the main card, or at least...
No, they were never on the main card. The Battle Royal was never on the main card. Never.
Oh, okay, so that was the only match that got swapped off, then.
Yeah, that got swapped off, okay. And it was never said that until, you know... Just turn on the WWE Network, and there's Dean Ambrose jerking the curtain on the pre-show. There's the former WWE Champion, former Money in the Bank winner, former Brock Lesnar opponent at WrestleMania. Current Intercontinental Champion.
Last year's Brock Lesnar opponent. It's just a combination of bad stuff altogether. You know, it deserved to be there. Like you said, like, I don't think it was a bad match per se. And I've liked Corbin more in the ring recently. But, I don't think there's any reason for him to win at this time. And I can't remember what I predicted, to be honest with you. But Dean Ambrose retaining at least keeps more visibility on the belt to me than Baron Corbin, who, again, like, the guy just hasn't had any traction pretty much his entire run in the WWE.
No. He's improved in a number of areas, but yeah, there's still not much there.
Yeah, because, I mean, he seemed to get called up too quick from NXT, and...
Stop. He was in NXT for like 3 years.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Because I was just scrolling through the old NXT episodes that were just uploaded to the WWE Network like last week.
Uh huh.
The first reference to his name was like somewhere in like spring of 2013.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which means he'd been training for, you know, a year or two before that, before they let him make his debut on TV.
Okay, well then, I'll put it this way, is they got to the point with him where they figured NXT would do him no good.
Yeah, oh yeah, at a certain
point,
yeah.
And he needed NXT to sink or swim on the main roster.
Oh yeah.
Oh. With that revised information.
Yeah, he just needed to sink or swim, and he's, once again, he's tall, he's gonna get some chances.
Yeah, and again, slight improvement, but I'm not sure that that's going to do a whole lot for you.
Right, no, not with a roster this stacked with wrestlers. I don't want to necessarily say stacked with stars, but stacked with bodies, guys with talent.
Yeah, I agree. That gets us off the pre-show.
Yeah, it took a little longer than I thought it would, but yeah, we're doing all right. We're nowhere near 7 hours.
Yeah, we're averaging about 7 minutes a match, so I'll take it. And I'll admit, like, I guess for some reason someone had posited the theory that the tag team match was going to be the opener since it was a ladder match. And the WWE over the years has had a habit of throwing the ladder match out first. I would have to say that there's a good reason why they did not throw that out there first.
No, there was a pretty good reason, which we'll get to. But yeah, right. And they opened the show with, well, after the Miracle of Beautiful, the opening video, and New Day shenanigans, they opened with AJ Styles versus Shane McMahon, one of the bigger matches on the show. Actually, there isn't a lot of big matches on the show, and I believe the key word is for this match would be over-delivered.
Oh. Yeah, you know, I think since this is on the SmackDown side of things, we talked about it, and I mean, AJ Styles pointed it out really in the very short build-up. They were wondering about how Shane McMahon could put on a good wrestling match. As I'm looking at Wikipedia here, it was the third longest match of the night.
It was a long opener. It was probably my favorite match on the show, honestly. I enjoyed it a lot. And it wasn't all AJ Styles.
No. They found a smart way to allow Shane McMahon to get in at least a couple of his spots by having the referee knocked out. So
yeah,
they
definitely
in.
Built to a strong finish. There were moments where, you know, Shane's offense looked clunky, but I think in this, because in this match, I think it worked because it made the match feel like more of a fight in the beginning when they were trading punches.
Oh, right.
You know, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't smooth. Shane definitely knows his, you know, jiu-jitsu throws and submissions. That stuff, you know, looked really good. Of course, everything AJ Styles does looks good.
Right.
Yeah, they really built an incredibly strong match, and a match was very hard to follow.
Because that was kind of the other interesting thing to me, is that two of the more well set up matches took place first, like hype wise. And yeah, when you end up over delivering in some ways, not in some ways, in a lot of ways, because yeah, I mean, we were worried about Shane not being able to wrestle, but really, outside of the referee knockdown spot, I mean, I would probably say that, you know, somewhere between the 15 to 18 minutes of that match were wrestled with a referee. And though they kind of did something of a relaxed rules match. They didn't really do anything illegal, per se. Because, I mean, they do, weirdly enough, let the announcer's table go as something legal almost at all times.
Yeah.
These days. So, yeah. It was a really good match. Like, I don't know what else to say in a lot of ways. Like, Shane really delivered. Like, AJ Styles, you kind of knew that he was going to deliver. And I guess that's the other question we brought up is, can Styles carry someone who's a non-wrestler? Like, that's what great wrestlers do. Well, you're saying that it could be your favorite match of the night. There weren't that many matches longer, so they didn't think that there are too many other quality matches on the card, I guess, in some ways. And in other ways, I wonder how much of the card was eaten up by entrances alone.
Oh, that ramp. That thing. I guarantee you, they gotta be regretting that thing. That thing added a half an hour to the damn show, at least. As compared to, like, the size of even the last year's ramp, or, you know, the typical WrestleMania ramp.
It's kind of interesting how that, it'd be interesting to just record that. Like, I'm sure that the WWE keeps track of that type of thing, or at least I'd hope so, about how long it's taken people to get out there. But they certainly need to, need to shorten that up if they're going to use Orlando again.
Yeah.
It is a venue.
Yeah, it's a weird venue in that it's, I don't even know, what does it even get used for on any kind of a regular basis? They don't, do they use it for college football on any kind of regular basis? I mean, it seems like it's a stadium where there isn't a team.
that's kind of interesting. I never looked it up.
I mean, it's one of the oldest stadiums in the country, I believe. It was like WWE had to, work really hard to renovate it, themselves when they did WrestleMania 24 there. I remember hearing that story because it just sat there for so long.
Oh, yeah, and this part was killing me too. It's now Camping World Stadium.
Oh, and they made sure that they had to say that as little as possible.
Let's see. Oh, yeah, it's only the Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl and the Russell Athletic Bowl.
Ooh.
And yeah, it's just a bunch of random, the Florida Classic, the MEAC SWAC Challenge. There is nothing, like, it is not used regularly. Orlando, who was City SC, the soccer team, was there for a couple of years, from 2011 to 2013. But they've since moved up from the USL to the MLS. So, it doesn't really get used that much on a regular basis.
No.
So
where did we get on this tangent? And how do we get back to AJ Styles and Shane McMahon? Talking about the ramp.
It all started talking about the ramp and the venue. Because I do think that makes it kind of unique. I think that Jeremy and I were talking about it. I thought the crowd didn't always sound that into it, and I was positing the theory that it's because it's one of the few open-air stadiums that they go to, even for WrestleMania.
Yeah. Anytime you're in open-air, the sound goes up and up and up and up. Yeah. It becomes an issue.
And plus, I also think, and I guess I'd have to look at it, you know, and plan to be sure, but it just seems like the seating is further back from the ring. At least the stadium seating itself is further back from the ring than what you'd have in those other venues, like the Superdome in New Orleans or even AT&T Stadium. But, I mean, they all have football fields, so it can't be that much different, honestly.
Right, yeah.
Getting back to Styles and Shane, you know, Styles won. He should have won. And hopefully, well, I don't know, not hopefully, because, well, not, yeah, I would think that with the outcome of the WWE Championship later in the evening, that Styles does have something to move along to if they want to move him there. I don't know how else they kind of continue this storyline, honestly.
No, this has got to be the end of this. I mean, you can't just completely move on from it by not having any tension between Shane McMahon and AJ Styles, but no, it needs to be done. I mean, there's no reason to continue. There's no reason for Shane to have another match again for a very long time. Even though I say that having loved this match, but obviously Shane does not need to be. You know, no one needs to think, well, we need Shane in the ring more often. No. Keep it special. Keep it something for WrestleMania.
Yeah. I agree, and he does seem to keep it pretty limited in that department, because did he, I feel like he did wrestle once in between WrestleMania last year and...
Yeah, Survivor Series, that's when I think people really started to turn on Shane and think that this was going to be a disaster, because he was awful in that tag match. I mean, he really was, and...
Yeah, so he must have done some work in the meantime, and good on him for improving in the ring. So, I don't know. Is there anything else to say about that match in particular?
No, I think we exhausted that one. We can move on.
I scrolled away from the list. Oh, yeah, but how can I forget about it? Because, I mean, we had talked about, Jeremy and I had talked about how Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho could have been one of the best built-up matches on the card as a whole, storyline-wise. And it's another match that, was done really well. Like,
it was really, it was a really good match. They, you know, they wrestled at a good pace. They were physical, but, you know, obviously it's the first match in which should be a longer feud, so they didn't do anything too crazy. They really had probably the best wrestling match on the show without any gimmicks, unless you count a powerbomb on the ring apron a gimmick, which I really don't.
Right.
So yeah, it wasn't meant to be, you know, on such a bloated show. It wasn't, you know, meant to be one of the bigger matches. So they had to follow a wild affair, and I think they did a good job with it. I would say the right guy went over, but I was also thinking that maybe they would put Jericho over at least once before Kevin Owens wins the title, because once again, you know, it's, you know, it kind of ambiguous as to whether or not, Jericho's, you know, leaving anytime soon, or just taking, you know, a few weeks off here, a few weeks off there, but still working, you know, Raw when he can, still, you know, doing the pay-per-views. He's still advertised for the next two Raw pay-per-views, which I imagine they'll continue this feud.
And the WWE seems to, not mind having the heel continue to go over. And I would imagine you kind of alluded to it at the start, like on a brand pay-per-view, this probably in some ways would have had a better spot if it was just on a Raw pay-per-view. Because
oh, yeah, it absolutely would have been one of the bigger hype matches and on the entire show. Yeah, so yeah, coming up at, you know, at Payback, I'm sure it'll be higher up on the card. And it will be more of a difference maker. It's a show. But then again, it was one of the, you know, maybe one of the two matches I was most looking forward to, you know, due to the build up. So
yeah.
Yeah, but still I'm there's nothing to be disappointed about. They once again had a good match. You know, second match on a long loaded card. Yeah. I got no complaints.
Yeah, and I mean, it was still, again, looking at the length of matches, it was still the fourth longest match on the entire card. So, again, like I think they judged it fairly appropriately. Like you note, if the card hadn't been completely out of control long, it probably would have gotten a little more time, but you know, that's okay. It was still a good match. I like Owens winning. Just the unsurety of Jericho, whether he's going to stick around or not, and Owens is just a really good heel. And I mean, in a lot of ways, if you're going to keep the prize fighter gimmick alive, the guy almost needs a belt at all times. Unless you're going to have him do a meltdown angle, which I don't think that ever does anyone any good when they start losing frequently and they have a meltdown. It only leads to more losing.
Yeah. It's good to have the title on a heel. He can do, you know, quite a bit with it. You know, not necessarily saying that Jericho won't get it back at some point, but it's good for it's good for Jericho, the babyface, to fight from underneath. So, yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah, and since we can dust our hands off on that one, a match that I certainly Jeremy said he posted it, and I guess I haven't even looked at it. The Raw Women's Championship was the next up on the docket here. And it was a four-way elimination match, and the other three participants did what the Revival and DIY could not do. They set aside their differences to get rid of the largest threat in the match.
Yeah, that part. Yeah, the early stuff with Nia Jax overwhelming them, and then them finally, you know, getting it together and being able to eliminate her, and including the triple pin. That stuff really worked. I like that a lot.
So I mean, it was kind of interesting because I was listening to Jeremy and Shahid's review of NXT TakeOver there, and I'm sure that we noted it too, but it's always interesting, the layout of a match when it's an elimination match as opposed to a single fall match for a multi-person match makes it completely different, you know, depending upon how things play out. And, it was a smart move. I mean, they got to show off Jax's dominance even over someone, you know, with the size of Charlotte, who is certainly the largest of the other three competitors.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, it made sense why Jax ended up, you know, getting eliminated. Now, why, if she didn't, like numerous other recent competitors, eliminate someone because there's no DQ, beyond me. But, you know, it was with her in the match, it was a good match. And the quality of the match was, you know, better once she was out. Like, I still think that Jax still kind of has some improvement.
Yeah, she's got a lot of work to do. I mean, there's still a lot more for her to improve. Yeah, getting her out early was the right call. You know, Charlotte, Bailey, and Sasha had a good match from there. I mean, comparing it to last year's women's triple threat match with Charlotte, Sasha, and Becky Lynch, it really wasn't in the same stratosphere as that one. But then again, maybe it wasn't meant to be on this show. But yeah, they think it's good stuff. I mean, unfortunately, the exposed turnbuckle spot that eliminated Sasha Banks was, you know, really screwed up pretty bad. They couldn't get it off.
Hey,
the turnbuckle pad off of the turnbuckle,
yeah,
all the way or even halfway.
Yeah, that was just a really big problem in general, because that spot accounted for both of the pins then, because it accounted for Sasha getting pinned and it helped lead to Charlotte getting pinned.
Yeah, yes it did.
So I don't think it was direct, but it was just like one of those things, just like, man, this is, I understood what Corey Graves was going for, because they did kind of have a little bit of it exposed, but I mean, they couldn't even, like, roll the turnbuckle the whole way underneath the metal ring to make it look a little bit better.
Yeah, no, they couldn't do that. Nah, not at all. Yeah, so there are definitely parts of this match that didn't work. I mean, the part that probably worked the best was, and it was a great moment, Charlotte's corkscrew moonsault to Sasha and Bailey on the floor was really breathtaking. Probably the highlight, easily the highlight of the match.
And Charlotte's willingness to eat Matt on her moonsault is one of those things that I am duly impressed by, because she misses that way too frequently to want to use it in a match on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times she's her hit to miss ratio is way off on that one.
Yeah, so I mean, she kind of goes into it knowing that she's gonna bite it, and man, she always gets big height on that thing. Like, I'm not trying to discount, because that corkscrew moonsault on the outside was, you know, something ridiculous and probably not something necessarily that any of the other ladies could pull off. Yeah, she just really has a lot of talent. And I certainly understand why they're high on her. So that really, in a lot of ways, made it even more interesting that they decided to go with Bailey retaining. Because, yeah, I'm not sure if I called that one or not. Now I'm finally getting to the predictions that Jeremy posted.
He posted predictions? I never saw that. Oops.
Well, yeah, and I felt bad for him. I went with Charlotte, so I was in the wrong on that one.
I called it right. I mean, they're gonna have Bailey go into her hometown at Payback as a champion, and then lose it there.
Yeah, that is a far more predictable thing. They sure do love the losses in the hometown, except for when it comes for the other women's match. But we can save that part for later too. Yeah, so I do hope that whatever formation of these four women they decide to go with next, that they're just given more time. again, it got a decent amount of time in the scheme of things, the match itself. But I at least think that Bayley, Sasha, and Charlotte are certainly capable of better matches on a Raw brand pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think so.
But we will
see where they go after this, because they have exhausted a lot of these matchups already. I guess if you turn Sasha heel finally, that adds at least a different dynamic to doing Sasha versus Bayley. But you know, Bayley versus Charlotte has to be done. I mean, you can't three losses in a row for Charlotte. You really can't go there again.
Yeah, when you can go, I'm 4-1 against you, you can't talk any trash. You know, it's just like, your act is a little bit thin on me. And that is the other aspect of an elimination match, is that someone like Charlotte, and they touted her pay-per-view winning streak, now that totals two, like when it's one, you kind of still have something to hang your hat on. But two in a row now does you no favors. And Sasha and Charlotte's worn out. Nia has an argument to take on Bayley on her own. But I'm not sure that I want to see that either.
No, I really don't. But I don't really see anything else on the horizon either. Cause I don't foresee any women coming up.
That's kind of the interesting thing about the potential NXT personnel coming up. The only one who was a possibility on the women's side would be Asuka. And with her retaining over the weekend, I would have to think that those plans are null and void.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, they don't have a whole lot of help, and I don't know, they haven't really given there any chance of... Well, it's been more than a year since the brand split. So, and they haven't really gone with a trade of any sort, or with any, hey, let's do some random drawing and people go from one brand to another. That's the only way to freshen that division up, I would think. Because I can't think of who else is on on the Raw brand, honestly, in the women's division. Just because they've so heavily focused on, honestly, three and, the three of them. So, we'll see where they go. Tonight might not be the night that we'll get the answers necessarily. But, we'll see. It'll be interesting. And I don't know why, the next match provided the biggest surprise for me, considering that we had mentioned the imminent signing of the Hardys numerous times over the last couple of weeks, really since they officially left TNA. It seemed like a foregone conclusion. I'm not completely sure why I was surprised that they were at WrestleMania.
The surprise was they were in the tag title match. In the now four-way ladder match.
Yeah,
I thought that the thought crossed my head that they could... I won't say that it didn't cross my head during the course of the week that they could be... Especially after they made it a ladder match, that they could be setting up for them to join the match. But then I also thought, geez, the Hardys are already doing a ladder match 24 hours earlier. There's no way they'll do two ladder matches in 24 hours. But that's exactly what happened. And apparently, even though I haven't seen it yet, the Hardys Young Bucks ladder match was supposedly pretty wild. They did a lot of stuff. They did not take it easy in that match at all.
That might have been a thought in the back of my head about them having to do two ladder matches in back-to-back nights. It could be why this match was not all that long.
Yeah, no, this wasn't all that long, but it was all action. It was one of the two or three best matches of the night, I would call it, easily.
Yeah, it was it was nonstop action. And
Total nonstop action.
It was
a really good. I mean, any concerns over Enzo in the match, you know, harming himself in any way were unfounded. Everyone got their spots. Everyone took their little breaks and were in the ring at various points. And it was really awesome. The whole thing from the Hardys' arrival to the end of the match. Yeah, I loved it. And it was probably the loudest the live crowd got all night.
I don't blame him, because I thought the New Day did a really good job of the teaser, because people are still really into New Day, so I don't think anyone would have been upset had they been the surprise team in the match. And considering that they did the one smart thing that, to me, I'm not sure if they had their wrestling gear on earlier in the evening when they came out. I can't really recall. But the fact that they came out in their wrestling gear to make this announcement was certainly one of those things that when you see someone come to the ring and they're dressed in street clothes and then someone offers to fight them, you're always like, oh, this is not going to happen. You know that 9 times out of 10, you're not going to see a match. Every now and again, a heel gets screwed by the good guy GM who forces him into a match in street clothes. But more times than not, you know, the match just doesn't end up happening. So them being in their ring gear, to me, helped that out quite significantly. Enzo became a human lawn dart most of the match, which probably helped him from hurting himself, which is pretty interesting. Cesaro with the super double stomp on, I'm not completely sure who it was, just looked like one of those things. I'm like, the double stomp always, I know that the wrestlers usually get their hands up to kind of block it, but that just always still seems like such a rough move to take, and to take it.
Yeah, off of Gallo's shoulders onto...
Was it Anderson?
What might have been Anderson. Is it Anderson or Cass, probably?
Yeah, one of the two. Yeah, I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, like I said, like, him just doing it standing always looks rough. And to have him standing on Gallo's shoulders on a ladder, or near the ladder, it's just like, oh my lord. What would a ladder match be without Jeff Hardy doing something that's fairly insane?
That was fairly insane. He did the Swanton off the ladder, threw his opponents through one ladder. I mean, it didn't quite hit Sheamus probably as they wanted to, but that's just a crazy thing to try and attempt. That's already forgiven.
Yeah, anytime you're doing anything that ballsy, I'll let a gaff slide. Because, I kind of felt bad. I see, because they filmed it from Sheamus' side of that angle. So you just kind of see Jeff Hardy's feet just kind of hit him in the arm, and he rolls off of his side of the ladder, too. But, I mean, it also helped that they immediately went to the finish. Because in the ring, Matt climbed to the top and grabbed the belt, so it wasn't something that could be dwelt on all that much either. If they had given Sheamus time to recover, then you might kind of have problems. But I mean, he was down long enough to set that move up, so you can't exactly have him pop up and run back into the ring anyway.
Right, no. They had him down. It looked good enough to keep him down, believably. And so again, they went right to the finish. So again, awesome match. You know, enjoyed it a lot. You know, good to see the Hardy boys with a Z back for at least for this one night. Be interested to see where they go from here or where they legally can go from here. But it was definitely classic Hardy boys. With other than you know Matt and Jeff right at the end of their celebration leading the delete chants that. I don't know if they cut away on purpose when they saw them doing that, or if that was just you know, we already had this promo piece, you know, queued up.
Oh yeah. Plus, I feel like he did it on the way to the ring too. And I honestly, I was a little surprised, being that the crowd is what it is, that you didn't hear that more during the match. You know, I mean, all. The vast majority of that crowd is going to be familiar with Delete.
Right.
So, yeah. It's, that's kind of interesting. But, yeah, it's another one where the tag team division, and I think we've said this a number of times, they've gotten more time. But they still haven't put that much time in the tag team division. Gallows and Anderson lose technically without being pinned, so they can always mention that.
Yeah. The Gallows and Anderson get their title rematch as soon as a Monday Night Raw, or they could drag it out for the next pay-per-view. I mean, Raw's tag team division is infinitely better than SmackDown, so there's any number of matches you could go with coming out of this, all the three of the other teams, and in the ladder match, Hardy's New Day has been one of those. I mean, it's something that Matt Hardy, since he started the Broken gimmick, has been literally, you know, teasing on Twitter for, you know, nearly a year now, that him and Brother Nero will come to the WWE and challenge the Day of the New.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah, and it does seem like, at least for this build-up to WrestleMania, they've made Cesaro and Sheamus an actual team.
Yeah.
For a little bit longer amount of time now. So, everyone should have something to do, hopefully in the meantime. So, yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to Hardy's 2.0 in the WWE. And yeah, they're obviously, we all said that, we'd want to see them on the SmackDown brand, but, they are clearly going to be on the Raw brand.
Yeah, I mean, the SmackDown tag team divisions, well, hopefully they'll get the Revival or some other, you know, team that they can promote, or they can keep going with Usos and American Alpha for a little while. I generally enjoy those matches, but.
Yeah.
There's just nothing else. After that's run its course.
Yeah, they're pretty empty after that.
Yeah.
Well, after that match, we had another match that, we thought was the best hype for SmackDown as far as storytelling goes. John Cena and Nikki Bella taking on The Miz and Maryse.
Yeah, once again, I'd be remiss if we didn't mention that there was the video package before this match was pretty awesome. It contained all the big moments from the feud. It was really entertaining. You know, really well done video.
Yeah, it's well because they needed more help with the video than the match, Well, they needed help with the video because of the match. This one certainly did not run long.
No, it was as basic as basic can get. In the end, you know, everything Miz and Maryse did and said was to, you know, set up John Cena and Nikki Bella destroying them. And the post-match. I mean, that was their role. That was their job. Nikki Bella's, you know, dealing with some lingering neck issues. Maryse hasn't had a match in 5 years. They were not in, the women were not in very much at all. And when you got Cena and Miz in the ring with Cena, it just, you know, as far as being a competitive match, it just didn't feel right.
I was going to say, the Miz got in a good chunk of offense, honestly. But again, how much are you going to do? Wikipedia is saying it's 9 minutes and 40 seconds. You know, considering that half of, you know, the Miz started the match off stalling. And neither of those guys work a fast-paced match anyway. So, I mean, there isn't a whole lot of flash to take away from, to distract you from maybe the quality of the match or anything like that. You're going to get kind of a little more slow-moving, traditional kind of WWE-style match out of both of these guys. Right. I don't think either of them are bad wrestlers, but, you know, you're not going to get any high-flying moves from anybody. Yeah, just nothing overly flashy. I mean, when a five-knuckle shuffle is one of your flashier moves in the match, that's kind of saying a whole lot.
Yeah, it wasn't flashy. It accomplished what it needed to accomplish. We're going to have a wedding at some point. Whether it's in the ring at a major on a SmackDown or at a big pay per view or just as or something for Total Divas or Total Bellas, I don't know. But yeah, the wedding's coming.
Yeah, that was hilarious. My wife thinks they only did this so that they could get the ratings up on Total Bellas.
Yeah, I bet they did. I'm sure they did.
So yeah, that was kind of amusing. I had to show her that part since she's at least occasionally delved into that part of wrestling. Next up was another married couple. Honestly, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Is there anything more to say about that match?
No, not at all. Because I was thinking in my head, because I don't have it in front of me, that Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt was next. But yes, that's right. Triple H to Seth Rollins was.
This was by far the longest match of the evening.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not going to call it a bad match. And it had a really hot finish. But these next two matches, because of the pace they were wrestled, this is where the time factor really started wearing on you. I think that the show took a dip in energy starting here, but came back for Goldberg and Lesnar.
I thought the crowd was really, at least after this match, the crowd was really toast.
Yeah, I mean,
and it,
once again, it made strong wrestling psychology sense for Triple H to be methodical and surgical about taking out Seth Rollins by the knee. But we were 2.5, 3 hours into this thing already, and we have this really long match based around, you know, a body part. And I actually, did you listen to the Chris Jericho episode that he did with Harvey Whippleman?
No, I did not.
Where Jericho said that unless it directly leads to the finish, he refuses to do any matches where you work on a body part.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because in his mind, you have to sell it for the rest of the match, so that affects your ability to, you know, do dynamic maneuvers especially for a babyface on the comeback.
Oh,
and it's just not that exciting to watch.
He certainly has points there. I would have to say, as a longtime viewer of wrestling, I never worry about that too much. Seth Rollins still did things involving his knee during the entire match, this match. And yeah. I don't feel like that's any different. That's why I get really amused when people talk about, oh, I can't believe they didn't sell this, that, or the other thing. They get really pissed about some match. Just because it's, to me, it's so frequent when that doesn't happen that I, in a lot of ways, I don't think about it. Just because there's never a long-term lasting effect between match to match.
Right.
Like, it's just like, oh, they just destroyed his match. 24 hours later, the guy's moving fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it kind of worked before. So, yeah, at least that aspect of his argument doesn't make any sense. To me, at least. Well, I was going to say, it didn't necessarily lead to the finish of the match, but considering that that was the entire build-up to the match, it was Seth Rollins' knee.
They had to do it. They basically had to do it that way.
Yeah.
The match should have been a lot shorter. They could have cut 10 minutes of Triple H working over the knee. because it didn't really play into the finish.
Oh.
Okay. As a way to build and transition to the finish, fine. But they kept there's about 10, there. How long was the match?
25 and a half.
Oh, they could have cut 10 minutes out of that. They really could have, and it would have been a lot better.
Hey, well,
I mean that would have made a 3-star, say 3.5-star 25-minute match would have been a 4-star 15-minute match, because the high points of the match were very high. They did some good stuff.
Right. Yeah, it probably would have helped, because that was the other thing, and I mean, I in some ways I feel bad, because we're talking more about the aftermath of the match, but this was the one where this match wrapped up, and I was like, holy shit, there are still 4 more matches to go.
Yeah, it was about 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Yeah, and it's just like, oh my, there are still 4 more matches here.
Yeah, and I
knew the women were going to be, cut for time, if not completely possibly eliminated from the show. I knew Goldberg and Lesnar wasn't going to go long. But when you realize that, no, This can't end before midnight, and they still did the mini concert right after this. They didn't cut. They had a deal with. I know those guys' record label, so you couldn't cut that from the show.
Right.
They were being paid. They were paying them to be there. For all we know.
Yeah. Because when they did that, I'm like, there's no way the SmackDown women are getting on this card.
Yeah, but they made it. But you know what? Once again, I'm getting back to Rollins and Triple H. The finish was really good. I mean, I really liked it. I liked that they didn't overdo it with the pedigrees. Triple H hit one, and Seth Rollins, kicked out by the grace of God, or whatever, But yeah. Then Rollins got to hit Triple H with one pedigree, and that was it. But of course, Triple H, being the smartest man in wrestling, he was still beat with his own finishing move. So that means that Triple H's finishing move is still the big killer move of the WWE. So in a sense, Triple H was still put over, even in a match he lost. Smart man.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I hadn't really thought about it, but in some ways, it would make sense for Rollins to get rid of that as a finisher.
Yeah. After beating Triple H with it, yeah, it would make some sense.
Yeah, just because, yeah, I mean, he started doing it as an homage to Triple H because he was his mentor. So the fact that he's doing it now that he's feuding with him doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, no. I mean, beating him with it and continuing to use it—that—that—that that was some poetic justice there.
Well, yeah. In that instance, beating him with his own move certainly has its own point. But yeah, moving forward, to me, you'd stop using it because it's just like, haha, used it to beat you. I'm out of here now. You
Yeah,
know, like
but
you're an afterthought to me now.
you could also declare yourself the new master of the pedigree and still keep, getting under his skin, because I wouldn't surprise me if from this they move on to a Seth Rollins Samoa Joe full feud to kind of keep this storyline alive at least.
Right. Yeah, because that was one, I think, when Rollins was initially hurt that I wondered if they wouldn't do Rollins Triple H at WrestleMania. But, you know, it was kind of surprising because I think that I said that there's a possibility that Samoa Joe would interfere in one of the matches that he was kind of peripherally involved in
Yeah,
prior, but he wasn't.
I thought it was a lock that he was going to interfere in this match, especially when it was Made Anything Goes. It just didn't, it was almost foolish of Triple H to not utilize Samoa Joe, in a match like this.
Yeah, and actually, for all their desperation to jam, and I'm thinking about it now, for all their desperation to jam people onto the card, it's kind of funny that Samoa Joe was not figured into the card in any way.
No, not at all. I mean, they didn't want to throw him out there to, I guess, they got bigger plans for him. They didn't want him to be like a foot soldier, or to use a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reference, that someone just out there to take an ass kicking for Triple H, which might be the right decision. Same with the decision not to include Finn Balor on the show at all, even though he's ready, who I'm sure we'll see on Raw, but decision made to keep someone off. Maybe they should have just done that with Braun Strowman at the point they were at this week.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I guess, is there anything else to note there with Rollins and Triple H outside of they did
I think we move
have.
on, because I do see, once again, Triple H isn't gonna wrestle again, possibly for another year, and I mean Rollins will very likely go on to feud with Samoa Joe. Maybe they'll move on to him, and maybe because he scored this big win, he'll be the first challenger of Brock Lesnar. Because you saw in the promo for Payback, Brock is working that show, and it's believed he's gonna work, because we don't live in a world where John Cena is still a full time on every pay per view, and especially wouldn't be on a Raw pay per view.
Right.
They are gonna. Brock Lesnar is gonna work every pay-per-view until he loses the title, it looks like.
Yeah, well, that'd be interesting. I mean, it still means he isn't working very much, which
Right,
is,
no, of course,
again,
no.
still completely fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other championship match though was the next one up, which was the WWE Championship. And
Oh
yeah.
boy, this one. There's a little bit to unpack here. Oh man, just the pace of this match from the entrance. You know both guys are, near Undertaker level with their slow marches to the ring, and on this ramp, yeah, that their entrances felt like they took forever. They didn't really have a lot in the ring to show for all this months and months and months of build up, because remember, this match has been built up since last fall. We've had 6 7 months here of this of them between the initial feud, the teaming, and the relaunch of the feud.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, to me, like, again, like, I was looking at the times of this match, And to see that this would barely made it over the 10-minute mark.
Yeah, it wasn't a long match, but it felt longer because of the pace they were the slow pace they were working, and all the idiocy with the maggots and the worms and the whatever else there was. What was the other thing? It was like not locusts. What were they called? Some kind of bug, some kind of insect, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was some type. It might have been
crickets. It was actually crickets.
Oh,
which...
crickets.
Yeah, crickets.
Yeah,
pretty,
it's one of those things that in wrestling they kind of talk about the, you know, the psychology of being freaked out and stuff like that. It's one of those things that why would I be freaked out if someone used a projector to put maggots on the ring mat? Like, what is that supposed to intimidate me for? Like, oh no, I don't know what a movie is. Please save me from the maggots. But I mean, they even had the referee jumping out of the ring. Like, it wasn't like this was isolated to just Orton being freaked out. Like,
no. And I mean, I was a little freaked out, but I was also drunk too. Because I was in the middle of a conversation with somebody with my head turned away from the TV, and then all of a sudden I turned, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little surprising just because they haven't utilized anything like that previously. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't understand why that's supposed to freak you out. You know?
No, and it didn't really work.
No. When you lose the match and you're pulling that, maybe you need to go back to the drawing board on what you do.
Yeah, and then the, the finish really came out of nowhere, because it really was, even though we call it the RKO out of nowhere, it's usually at the end of a hot, still at the end of a hot finishing sequence. This literally was an RKO out of nowhere with the finish, and I have not been a fan of the Bray Wyatt, you know, spooky antics, so I'm glad that, you know, granted, yes, Bray Wyatt's due a rematch, but I'm hopeful that we can get Bray Wyatt and his spooky antics out of the way and get a real feud between Randy Orton and AJ Styles going very soon.
Yeah, they just need something for Wyatt. I don't know what in particular they can do, honestly. Just the character is so adrift, and I mean, I think that he can do well in wrestling, but he almost needs a completely new character in some ways. But I don't know how he gets out of that rut either. Like, it's kind of one of those interesting things to me that it, wow, there's just a lot to, there's a lot to work with there, but they keep on getting him away from his, you know, his groups. And you know, Randy Orton caused it this time, but if they reform the Wyatt family, like, what good does that do you? You know, they were never really dominant to start with. So, I don't know. Wyatt's just in a bad spot. I like him, but he's in a bad spot.
Yeah, he's in a. It is a bad spot, and I think it got worse last night because the match just didn't deliver.
Well,
which,
yeah.
You know, it's take two to tango, but you know, Randy Orton's already made.
Yeah, and I guess that's the other thing is that he's the, you know, Wyatt's the one that lost the belt. You know, they finally give it to him, and everyone's like, oh, he should have been given this title a long time ago. Then he gets it, and he loses it within... Did he lose it? Win it in Elimination Chamber?
Yeah, he just won an Elimination Chamber.
Yes.
I mean, it didn't... That's the problem. It didn't feel like a championship match, because with all the bullshit attached to it in the build-up and during the match, it didn't feel like a championship match. And... Bray Wyatt didn't there's points where over the course of the last 6 weeks where you could have forgotten that Bray Wyatt was even the champion. That, you know, it didn't, once again, he didn't feel like a champion. Yeah, this was, this title run here between Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania, I would call it a failure.
Yeah. And like you said, the match really was out of nowhere. Like, you're correct in pointing out that normally Orton has like a 15-minute match and then something happens and it creates an opening for him to hit an RKO out of nowhere. And then this was just like, he hit him with that RKO, and I'm like, oh, okay, Wyatt's going to kick out. And I'm like, oh, he didn't kick out?
Yeah, it's a weird deal in that it didn't feel like it was time for the finish, but I'm glad it was the finish because I just wasn't enjoying the match.
Yeah, I didn't have any problems with it being the finish. Again, we'll see what they do moving forward here. Because, and really to play off the next match, Brock Lesnar taking on Goldberg.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg, the greatest 5-minute match in WrestleMania history, if not wrestling history.
Yeah, that's one of those ones where I'm okay with it. Like, this is like, in the UFC, again, just because I watch it a lot, the heavyweights just don't have a long match. And these two are, you know, the biggest of the big for the most part. You know, unless you throw in Braun Strowman or Big Show, someone like that. So, like, having a quick, hard-hitting match that was just, like, power move after power move after power move was exactly what the doctor ordered. And, yeah, like you said, like, looking at it, I knew that it was a short match, but I was just like, man, like you said, it was a great match. Like, for being that kind of length, but I'm not sure how many people with that short of a time frame can pull that off outside of those two guys.
No. This was definitely something unique, and you know, the build up really, you know, dating back to last fall, you know, really led perfectly to this. This was the perfect match to blow off this feud. Send Goldberg back off on his way, although once again, we just made a point. His relationship with WWE does still seem to be good, so you can bring him back. You can certainly bring him back at a later date,
right?
And you know, it was a perfect way to launch Brock Lesnar's latest title reign.
Yeah, and I mean, he gets to start that title reign tonight, so I'm sure that there will be some additional words from Paul Heyman this evening about how Brock Lesnar fulfilled his purpose. And yeah, I think that there are plenty of suitors out there. The man in the main event of WrestleMania will certainly be in the mix at some juncture.
Yeah, I mean, you'd almost think it would be really soon, but I think they're gonna hold that one off.
Well, and that's why you mentioned Rollins. That could go to a decent place, because I feel like Rollins never got a rematch for his title anyway, so he could.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he beat Roman Reigns at Money in the Bank, and then. Got cashed in by Dean Ambrose.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I thought he'd been using that in lines, but obviously I'm wrong. So, or else the Money in the Bank couldn't have happened. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there is something that Seth Rollins snuck into the contract. But whatever. I guess it's kind of irrelevant. I kind of agree with you that if Lesnar's going to be defending at Payback, that does not seem like the time to have him and Roman Reigns.
No, that's a SummerSlam match, if not a WrestleMania match. Because, again, everything we're doing here, We're still charging. We're still chugging along on the on the with the Roman Empire.
Yeah, so I don't think we need to talk about this match longer than it actually lasted.
No, we don't. No. Yeah, we can move on to the was it a
the women's...
Was it shorter than than Brock Lesnar and Goldberg or not? I'm not sure. What's the time there?
They are saying
on the SmackDown Women's
on the wiki.
Match.
They're saying it was 5:35.
And how long was Goldberg from Bell to Bell?
4:45.
Oh, wow. It was shorter than I thought it was. Okay. So, yes, it was the second shortest match of the evening.
Yeah, they were certainly crunched for time. But this was one where a lot of times I'm like, oh, well, what are you going to do with such a short, match? But they kept everyone engaged. In the match, I thought, or at least they did as best they could.
Match a good action. I'm not sure exactly what Mickie James and Becky Lynch were doing with their little Native American garbs. I think I've read somewhere that Mickie James is part Native American, so I don't think it was anything that anyone's gonna look at as being offensive. But yeah, it was strange because you don't think of her that way either.
Yeah, I believe I've seen some sultry pictures of her in Indian garb previously, but it was pretty interesting to see her in a full headdress and everything.
Yeah.
The Lynch one was a little stranger to me, considering that she's the Irish last kicker. It did not exactly even say... I mean, I think she could draw from the show Vikings that she was a an extra on or stunt woman on.
Yeah.
Fit the history of Ireland
maybe
better.
America. Maybe it was some kind of ode to like a Braveheart type of deal, but yeah, some of the looks weren't working for me. Except for well, certainly exception, Alexa Bliss. Her look always works for me. But yeah, no, everyone got their stuff in. You know, everything looked good. Nothing was rushed to the point where, you know, they were, you know, screwing moves up left and right or anything of that nature.
Yeah.
Natalya did her stack up, you know, sharpshooter that she busts out whenever in big matches.
Right.
And Naomi got the win in her hometown.
Yeah.
The only thing is I didn't really like the submission hold she used. I mean, Naomi does not need to be a submission specialist.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why they did that, because I'm trying to think of what she's been using as her finisher, because it hasn't been the rear view recently, has it?
Yeah, it really hasn't been, and actually that's a fine finish for her, so I don't understand, you know, why they, because it didn't, I don't think it looked especially good. But a minor qualm. You know,
yeah.
Once again, you know, good action, you know, they put the hometown girl over it for once. It felt like a good moment.
Yeah, and it was another one of those ones that beforehand you were talking, or maybe when we were doing our NXT review where we were talking about maybe we needed a rest before Nakamura and Bobby Roode. This one certainly, like, after, like you said, maybe the best 5-minute match ever in the WWE, you have a little bit of a cool down with this one, and then you end up going with Reigns and The Undertaker for the main event.
Yeah, and that leads us to the main event.
Yeah.
I don't want to say anything bad about it. It was what it was. It was the best it was going to be. You kind of knew what you were getting into. It was great to see JR. Great to hear JR on the call for the match.
Yeah, I think Jeremy described it well. He's just like, that was everything I didn't want the match to be, in that it kind of showed how old Undertaker was.
Yeah, you never want to see the guy go out like that. But once again, they kept it interesting enough. You know, Roman Reigns was fine.
Yeah.
Maybe not all that much better than fine, which, you know, in a match where, you know, your opponent is a step or two behind, you need to be a step or two forward. I'm not sure exactly if Roman Reigns pulled that off, but yeah, they gave them a lot of they broke the Spanish table, whichever one of the tables that was left standing after this Shane AJ Styles match. And you know, they got chairs. Yeah, you know, but again, a lot of the match was, you know, Superman punches and spears.
Yeah, it was a really limited match, and like you said, it was fine. And yeah, I mean, I didn't think that that Taker was going to end up winning this one, especially when it had dawned on me that it was 100% going to be the main event.
I think after we first recorded it is when word started leaking out it's going to be the main event. JR is very likely to coming back and do commentary for it, that broke, you know, by Thursday, Friday, and then it's like the gears are really turning. That, you know what, this is it, this is his last match.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I didn't even allude to it. I mentioned it at the beginning of the show. I mean, Undertaker kind of leaving everything in the ring did get me to stay up even later than I was already up.
Yeah, that was a really great. It was really well done. Once again, it's gonna be an. I don't imagine that they'll drag him out tonight and have, you know, everyone on the roster giving a standing ovation, because that's just not who he is. And, you know, everyone else is saying that, you know, this is the end of the Undertaker, you know, thank you Taker trending worldwide and all those things, but in the end, I don't think we may never hear him actually say the words I'm retired, because that small chance he changes his mind, he himself does not want to be a liar.
Yeah, and that would be perfectly, if he doesn't ever say those words, or maybe doesn't say them for another couple of years.
Well, at least until he can, you know, feel that he can safely, you know, speak from the heart and be, you know, more real at his Hall of Fame induction. Which should still be some time away. I don't know if you need to immediately go there in New Orleans next year or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of easy when the main event is more about Undertaker appreciation than anything else. Because, yeah, I mean, he put over the guy that, you know, the WWE wanted to put over. Whether that did the trick or will really help Roman Reigns in the long run, I'm skeptical.
I mean, there's a reason to be skeptical. I mean, once again,
but
Roman Reigns at this point struggles for reasons that at this point aren't his fault. And it's gotten to the point where it's actually a shame.
Yeah, I mean, he did what he could with a limited opponent, and he isn't being touted as AJ Styles anywhere. Like, even someone like me, who's pretty much been on the Reigns bandwagon the whole time, he's still pretty young, and I mean, he's still young in the wrestling business, at least, so there's still stuff for him to learn, and he's done a pretty good job, considering. So, you know.
Yeah, good job, and once again, it was very well done, the farewell of the Undertaker, you know, God bless him. You know, love the guy. You know, big part of my life for almost the entirety of my life. You know, I definitely, I'm glad they put an end to it there. You know, you could argue it could have been, or maybe should have been earlier, but I'm glad this is it, and I will be cringing if in a year's time he's changed his mind.
Yeah, I would hope that it's the end. I mean, yep. I remember
he didn't look well. He didn't move well. There was very little left.
Yeah,
I mean, he was running on fumes there, and you don't want to see that. You don't want to see that get worse.
Yeah, and he didn't particularly look good the year previous to that, or even down in Orlando, to be honest with you, although, not Orlando, New Orleans the first time.
Yeah, New Orleans the first time,
but part of that was written off on the probable concussion that he had, though I don't feel like that was ever, like, 100% confirmed.
No, I'm for sure a lot of it was the concussion, but I don't think that Undertaker and Lesnar had a good match laid out that night. Even beforehand, I don't think that they did. They just didn't. Actually, Undertaker and Lesnar were able to, a year and a half later, you know, get through some good stuff. You know, the last good stuff Undertaker's going to be involved in. I mean, the match with Shane McMahon last year was what it was. It'll always be remembered for Shane's jump off the top and really not much else. But, you know, it drew as a curiosity. You know, it's confirmed that that match, you know, they sold like 25,000-30,000 more tickets after the match was announced than they already had. You know, they did, you know, good numbers on the network. So that match served its purpose. And this match, again, it served its purpose. You know, put Roman Reigns over, gave Undertaker his last big moment. Yeah, I'm overall, you know, I'm glad I watched that.
Okie dokie. Well, I don't think we need to give the WrestleMania a star rating as a whole, because I'm pretty horrific at that. But I mean, I was pretty happy with the card. Like, outside of the time, the length of time that it was, like, there wasn't a match that really stood out to me as complete trash.
No, it really didn't. No, I mean, again, there were issues with the length of the show, some of the, you know, the flow of the show. It certainly wasn't one of the, as one, you know, flowing show, it was nothing compared to, say, NXT TakeOver from the night before. But as, you know, a collection of matches and moments, I can't give it anything but a thumbs up.
Cool. Well, I'm definitely, if we're doing it that simplified, I'm definitely in the thumbs up territory. So, for that, since we're trying to get this done and up, which will probably be like right when Raw starts, this is at DeFrango11. On the other end is at Chris Calamita, the brand at Stunt Granny. This has been our mega colossal super podcasting week of WrestleMania 33. Maybe we'll see you next year in New Orleans.
Later.